Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Interesting weekend in H-Town. You had a UFC fight. You had the start of the XFL. You had AJ Hinch end his silence. That made a lot of the rounds in regards to music. So there was a lot going on in Houston. It was a unique weekend, to say the very least, but it was an enjoyable one, John. It was nice to take in an event, a new one, without any of the BS that comes with the major sports teams in town.
XFL has something going. I'm not saying, hey, they're going to be around for 10 years or they're going to be absorbed into the NFL at some point. I think they've got a niche, man, and they recognize that, and they're doing things the right way. A lot of fun, not just on a personal level, because we had a blast with the tailgating we did and watching the game and a big group going, and it was a lot of fun. But I think just as a product, I mean, there's something there. I think there really is something.
What did
there.
You think of the quality of football? Because I agree with you on the rules, but what about the actual quality of football?
I mean, hit and miss, but I think certain players, if you didn't know the level of play was, if you didn't look for deficiencies, you wouldn't have found them. I'll put it that way. Because, like, there were a couple of times I saw a running back or a receiver get to the edge and not really show that burst that you might see with certain NFL players. You know what I mean? It wasn't like, if you looked at it and just kind of watched the game, you wouldn't have noticed that big of a drop off.
I want to credit my boy, Jared Sandler, for throwing this question out there. He works out there at 105.3 The Fan in Dallas. I thought this was an interesting hypothetical because I think the dumbest question that gets asked over the course of a year, and it doesn't happen very often, but every time there's a great college football team, you hear the question, could Alabama beat the Cleveland Browns or whatever it is? I think it's asinine. Like the worst NFL team would win the national championship, and they'd win every game by about 42 points in college. I think so. But do you think that this year's LSU team could beat the best XFL team or the worst XFL team? Let's say the worst XFL team. You think LSU would tap the brakes off them, or you think?
I don't think they'd
tap
the brakes off of them. And keep in mind, there's a lot of NFL players, former NFL players, on these rosters.
I get that, but if I told you to bet, if you had to bet LSU, and then you get the worst XFL team, who would you take?
I'd bet on LSU, but I don't think it would be like, oh, they'll crush them or anything. There's pretty good players out there, except for Connor Cook.
Connor Cook, by the way, Texans win a playoff game against the Raiders a few years ago with Connor Cook as a quarterback. He can't even start on your XFL squad. He's holding the clipboard a few years later. That's crazy to me.
In the XFL.
Yeah, and I mean, you try to minimize the playoff win, and sometimes you can come across as a hater. The reality of the situation is the guy that Bill O'Brien beat in his one playoff game before that Buffalo comeback by Deshaun Watson can't even start in the XFL.
Yeah.
3 years later. Yeah. This isn't like a guy who's trying to hang on 10 years. This isn't like Ryan Mallett or whatever trying to do his thing. 3 years after you beat them in a playoff game, he can't even start in the same city on the XFL team.
I mean, that means something, right?
I find that absolutely fascinating. Some big news out of the NFL, by the way. The Los Angeles Chargers and Phillip Rivers, they've mutually agreed that Rivers will enter free agency. And he's not going to return to the team in 2020. There was speculation about this. It is officially official, according to ESPN's Adam Schefter. So we're about 37 days away from NFL free agency, and Phillip Rivers is going to be out there. He can be had. Tampa Bay has been mentioned. I wonder if the Colts are going to take a look at Phillip Rivers, but he's going to be on the market. So one of the probably a future Hall of Fame player going to be either retiring or he's going to be getting a fresh start when the 2020 NFL season begins.
He's going to play somewhere this year, right?
He doesn't strike me as someone who wants to leave, wants to not play. So I'm assuming so. I don't know how much he has left, man. Like he was pretty rough this year. Phillip Rivers was very, very, very rough to watch this year. And I know the Chargers had some injuries. You know, they started out the season without their starting left tackle. Melvin Gordon was in the middle of a holdout, but I don't know how much he has left. So I don't know how many options he's going to have. I will say this, Phillip Rivers, if he goes somewhere, he's not going to go somewhere to be a backup. He's going to go somewhere to be a starter.
Jason LeConfora.
You lost me there.
And what does McClain call him? Or not McClain. He's been called Jason No Confirma. He continues to hear that his most likely destinations are going to be Tampa.
Okay, with Bruce Arians.
Or Indianapolis.
Okay, so the Colts. Colts are going to be looking for a quarterback. I think it's becoming more and more apparent that even with Jacoby Brissett, whether it's Cam Newton, whether it's Phillip Rivers, the Colts are going to look at at bringing in a veteran quarterback, which I think is interesting. Texans, we don't know what they're going to do when free agency begins, but there's talk that maybe they might, I don't want to say overpay, but pay more than you typically want to pay a running back. Melvin Gordon's name is coming up in the rumor mill. I don't know how valid this is, but I just know that Melvin Gordon's going to be a free agent. You're not going to have to trade for him this year. And maybe that's a position that the Texans would like to look into and potentially upgrade.
Well, this isn't a solid, like someone reporting that the Texans are interested in Melvin Gordon, but there are some murmurs, if you will, about Gordon being a possibility with the Texans. Number one, it wouldn't surprise me. And it wouldn't surprise me mostly because less than a year ago, the Texans were reportedly, and actual reports from NFL people, in some discussions or had some thought about trading for Melvin Gordon. So he's clearly at least been on the radar. All due respect to John McClain, who immediately last year when those reports came up said they were absolutely not true. That's what he said. But there were at least some murmurs about it even as far back as a year ago. And the other thing that makes sense is there's no building for the future right now with the Texans, especially Bill O'Brien.
There's not. I mean, I think it's a 2-year window now. And I don't think this is a long-term type of thing. I mean, you're going to have, if you look at this, just the quarterbacks that are going to be free agents, you're going to have Phillip Rivers. Looks like Tom Brady's going to be an unrestricted free agent for the first time in his career. Drew Brees, technically, but he's made it clear that he's only going back to the Saints. Do you want to roll the dice on guys like Teddy Bridgewater? He's going to be out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are a lot of names out there at the most important position in sports that are being thrown out there as possibilities being on new teams. Mm-hmm. It's insane.
Right now, who would you think would be, look, forget the Super Bowls, but who do you think, if you're an offensive coordinator, a head coach in the NFL, would be in more demand, Phillip Rivers or Tom Brady?
Probably Tom Brady.
You think?
I think Tom Brady, yes.
I think it obviously depends on the situation, but Rivers, see, you thought you saw a decline. I saw a decline, but maybe not as much as you. I think, you know, with him in the right situation, and maybe Indianapolis is it, but I think Phillip Rivers would he's still got something left. He's still got something left.
I mean, he's got a little bit left, but yeah. I mean, damn, he's old, dude.
Yeah, of course.
He's 38. Not very mobile. But the other thing that you got to think about with the Indianapolis Colts, because we look at the Colts, lost Andrew Luck last year. One of the most injured teams in the league, but the one thing that they do have going for them, one of the best offensive lines in the game. So, you know, Phillip probably didn't have as much time last year,
right,
you know, without the left tackle for the first 6 weeks. So, if you do go to Indianapolis, whether it's Cam Newton, whether it's Phillip Rivers, you are going to have one of the best offensive lines in football out there in Indy. So that's
well, it's
something
a destination point for any of those quarterbacks, Indy. Now I feel, and from what I've been, you know, kind of gathered in recent weeks, is they like the Colts like Jacoby Brissett. They're not sure they're going to fall in love with him though. You know, that I think they're always going to keep that door open for someone. And if that someone is Phillip Rivers, he would scare me a lot more than Jacoby Brissett. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Right,
I would think so.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm kind of thinking about it, but yeah, I think so. That he would scare me more than mm-hmm. Jacoby. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I thought they liked Jacoby. I think they handled that perfect, though.
They do like Jacoby. They just don't. They're not sure that he can get him to the next level. And I think that's what they're wrestling with right now in Indianapolis.
And also, you got to wonder, you know, with the Colts and let's say that Phillip Rivers is going to go to Indianapolis. Is he going to try to, I mean, because he's been breaking bread for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Is he going to try to break bread, or is he going to, because they got the $90 million in cap space, is he going to maybe take a little bit more of a team-friendly deal to where they can use that, that they can build a team around him? Because Phillip Rivers has never won that Super Bowl. He needs that Super Bowl to solidify the legacy. So if you do go to Indianapolis with all that cap space, is it going to be a situation where he's trying to get paid like one of the elite?
I think he just wants to get paid enough.
Less money?
I think he just wants to get paid enough, not break any banks. He's already broken the bank several times. And he just wants to be able to have a chance to win that ring. So I could see where, for him, Tampa's attractive because he's moved to Florida. He's moved his entire family
and
to Florida.
And you have the receivers.
Yeah,
you have Mike Evans and you have Godwin, who
but
had even a better year than him.
But Indianapolis has protection for him, that offensive line. And they've got a first-round pick that they're going to get a wide receiver. I can guarantee you that a wide receiver is going to be high on their list. So another wide receiver with T.Y. Hilton and protection. and enough money to make it worth his while.
This is the deepest wide receiver draft that they've had in a long, long time in the NFL. So there's going to be a lot of receivers selected. It's going to be one of those situations where some of the guys selected in the second round look like absolute steals. It is very, very, very deep when it comes to wide receiver this year in the NFL draft. So if you need a receiver, this is the time. And that kind of makes it a little bit stranger, too, when you're talking about the Houston Texans and you're talking about the fact that there's such a fall-off with Will Fuller when he's out of the lineup. I like Kenny Stills, but if you're going to trade, throw in a second-round pick for to include Kenny Stills in a trade, who, by the way, was probably going to get released by the Dolphins, but if you're going to do that, then there shouldn't be, regardless of the skill sets, there shouldn't be as much of a drop-off with that kind of price, a second-round pick from Fuller to Stills. If you have a good offensive coordinator and a good offensive coaching staff, the drop-off shouldn't be that significant, which is what we've been presented as in regards to that. When you trade that second-round pick, man, I mean, I know you have it this year, but next year you don't. But next year you don't, and you got rid of that third. I mean, this is a year where you could have drafted somebody and gotten someone for pretty cheap. And he probably would have been a significant contributor for the Texans. It's going to be a deep, 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 deep wide receiver group. CeeDee Lamb's the guy who scares me.
Who's to say they're not? I mean, I know the cornerback and defensive end is what you're looking for, or rush end.
Okay.
But who's to say, you know, if they cut bait? Keep in mind, if you're going to get money, if you're going to need all the money you can for.
I know you're trying to cut Will Fuller.
All I'm saying, I'm not trying to cut Will Fuller. All I'm saying is you save $10 million. You save $10 million. By releasing Will Fuller.
Gosh.
So it's something you got to think about.
But then what?
But then,
is Kiki done?
Boy, they don't like Kiki anymore, do they? He's fallen off.
They didn't like him all last season.
I know. He couldn't even get on the
field. Can Kiki bounce back next year?
Yeah, I think he could, but you got to get in good graces first. Once B.O.B. turns on you.
When you head into the dog, when you're in that doghouse, it's hard to get out. It is very hard to get out. And we saw it with Deontay Foreman.
Ask all the players that have been cut.
It's going to be interesting.
Not just Foreman, just go down the list.
I mean, you've expected such big things from Kiki QT. Maybe he can get out of the doghouse, and that kind of helps fill a potential void for Will Fuller if they decide to cut bait. Or, let's be honest, if they decide to bring him back and. Let's say Will continues to be injured like he has
been.
Right,
so then what?
Something to keep an eye on. But the bottom line is there's a lot of depth at receiver in the upcoming draft. And the Indianapolis Colts most likely in 2020 will be functioning with a new player at the most important position in the game. The OG John Lopez, Landry Locker, Figgy Fig with you. Did the Astros use buzzers? We know they were banging on trash cans, but did they use buzzers? A.J. Hinch answered that question last week, or did he? That's next. All right, we know they were beating on trash cans, but were they using buzzers? Were the Astros taking it to the extreme? Was Jose Altuve wearing a buzzer when he walked it off against Aroldis Chapman and the New York Yankees? The OG John Lopez, Landry Locker, Figgy Fig with you. Speaking of the Astros, my goodness, man. Our friends at Texas Bay Credit Union are hooking us up. We're going to be at spring training from the 12th through the 21st. Pitchers and catchers report on the 13th. Players report, position players report on the 17th. We're going to have all the inside info and access from Fort Lauderdale, courtesy of Texas Bay Credit Union. You heard me just ask the question as to whether or not the Astros were using buzzers. One guy who would know, the manager, the former manager of your Houston Astros, A.J. Hinch, did an interview with MLB Network, and he was asked straight up, was Jose Altuve wearing a buzzer?
Well, the commissioner, we got investigated for 3 months, and the commissioner's office did as thorough an investigation as anyone could imagine was possible. I mean, I know he mentioned the emails and the texts and the messages, and I believe them.
I love the guy. I've been defending him. I thought he just knocked it out of the park overall.
That was his worst answer.
On his interview. That is the proverbial all the president's men denial. Play that again and tell me where he denies it.
Well, the commissioner, we got investigated for 3 months, and the commissioner's office did as thorough an investigation as anyone could imagine was possible. I mean, I know he mentioned the emails and the texts and the messages, and I believe them.
Where's the denial? Where's the denial there?
I don't think they were wearing buzzers.
You
heard him.
I don't think there were.
The commission did their investigation, John.
Well, the commissioner also said there wasn't enough, quote, credible evidence.
There you go.
That doesn't mean there wasn't evidence.
So there you go.
Get out of here with that stuff.
That's it.
Now
there you go.
Now you're just pandering.
There you go.
The official quote was there wasn't enough, quote, credible evidence that they were wearing buzzers. And then, and look, I'm gonna have AJ Hinch's back. You know, I just love that dude, and I think he should be back in baseball soon. But that was the low point of the interview. That was just like, so did you do it? Well, it was an investigation. There was an investigation going on. They interviewed a lot of people. It's not a denial.
Damn it, AJ. You were pitching a perfect game until that.
Yeah, everybody gives up that walk. Now it's just a no-hitter.
You were pitching a perfect game. I remember exactly where I was when we got the news that AJ Hinch would be fired. Mm-hmm. And it was strange for me because we just heard that the suspension was coming down. Jim Crane scheduled a media session at 2 o'clock. And as we were getting off the air, we just figured, you know, Jim Crane's going to go up there. He's going to talk about Luno and Hinch being suspended for 1 year, and we're going to figure out, you know, where the Astros go from here. Who's going to be the interim manager? Who's going to be the guy running things that's not Jeff Luhnow? Furthermore, how do you enforce Jeff Luhnow not being able to work for 1 year? It seems kind of hard to do that with the general manager. But I'll be damned if we don't go in the side studio, the lab as I call it, and we immediately hear Jim Crane say that he is firing AJ Hinch and Jeff Luhnow. It was weird for us. It was a strange situation. Mm-hmm. It's one of those moments in sports where you always ask the, where were you when this happened? I'll always remember where I was, but I could not imagine being AJ Hinch on that day. This was AJ Hinch on MLB Network talking about how strange it was for him and what happened the day that he got canned by Jim Crane.
I got notified that was the day that we were going to get the letter, and it was going to come via email. And so I waited and got the email. And then I was asked to come up or Jim called me and said, hey, can you come down to Houston? Because I live about 30 miles north of Houston. And I said, well, I'm already here. And he said, come on upstairs. And so I went up and had a very emotional conversation with Jim. So it happened fast. And then the press conference happened shortly after the meeting with me. But I was able to have a face-to-face with Jim. And then, you know, then I had to focus on my family and get my kids out of school before it hit their phones. You know, things you never have to think about until it happens. Like, I didn't want it to pop up on my daughter's phones at school. Needed to tell my wife and then get everybody home.
That says a lot about the dude right there, doesn't it? I mean, his career just got crushed, set back. Not ended, but Luno's might be ended, but got crushed. And first thing he does is, well, let's get the kids out and not let them have to go through this stuff. I think that says a lot about the man right there. I really do. And boy, you talk about an emotional thing. Do you think he expected to get fired?
No.
I don't either.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't even know if he expected to get suspended for a year, quite honestly.
Well,
They kept piping it up, saying it was going to be a huge, huge punishment.
Yeah, I think he had a hunch.
But I didn't think he was going to get suspended for a year.
I think he probably had a good idea that it was going
to
be some kind of
suspension. I'm starting to think maybe the punishment was a little too rough.
I mean, for Hinch, maybe.
I think
Crane's perspective, you can't, you know, fire Luhnow and not. You're talking about the suspension.
I'm talking about just the punishment as a whole. I can understand the 1 year suspensions. I think that's to minimize a 1 year suspension from a manager and a GM is just quite frankly idiotic. And I've been hearing way too many people do it around the country. I think it's absolutely idiotic to minimize a manager and a GM being suspended for a year. But do you really have to give up first and second round picks for 2 years? And I know it's baseball, and a lot of times it's not as significant. You don't see it 5 years, but so you're taking away two of those as well. I think Rob Manfred's been a pretty weak-ass commissioner so far, and I think he basically just took advantage of this and tried to drop the hammer on the Astros. And I don't feel like other teams are getting investigated to the point that the Astros are. I'm not condoning it. I'm not saying that it wasn't a significant thing that the Astros did. I think it's more of an advantage than steroids, quite honestly, and I think they deserve to be punished. But, I mean, I think it's a little bit ridiculous how hard they came down. And I think it's really, really strange, almost like I feel like I'm in a weird dream or in the Twilight Zone, to hear some of these guys that have been around baseball as long as they have act like this wasn't enough of a punishment. That's idiotic to me.
That last part you said is total crap. I mean, two guys got fired. Two of the best people in the game
suspended
got fired.
Suspended and then fired, right?
Suspended and then fired. Yeah, that's just silly. But I keep going back and trying to put myself in Jim Crane's spot. You know, he's not only a competitor and wants to win, but he has to run a business, man, a major, major business. And
he handled it right.
He handled it right.
I mean, you can't just let guys tread water for a year.
Yeah.
Because then what do you have to do? So I'm not saying that he didn't handle it right, but mm-hmm. I just think, I mean, I think Rob Manfred's been a pretty mediocre commissioner, to say the most. And I think he basically just took this as an opportunity to finally prove himself. And I think it's a little bit disingenuous for the way that he's handled this, because I think Rob Manfred has been very met, and I think now all of a sudden he's looking at this almost as like his legacy and his way to clean up.
Yeah, but on the one hand, you know, you're talking about you know, all these people are coming down unfairly on the Astros.
I don't know that it's unfairly. I just think they're being a little dramatic.
Or dramatic, whatever you want to dramatically, in terms of a national perception, a national conversation. Imagine what it would have been if he didn't, you know, offer this stringent a penalty.
Yeah, if he hadn't come through and made it even worse with
let's say he just fined the Astros and took away the draft picks. People would be going nuts.
Would it be? Or did they see this? Or
look what they're doing now, after the fact that they got fired and suspended.
I wonder if it's just a reaction to try to be even more dramatic. Like, I wonder if, like, $5 million fine would have happened if people would be sitting here, like, outraged, you think?
Yes. Yeah, I think even more so. Because look how outraged they are now, and they did make those moves. They did suspend them and fire them.
And this isn't just, like, because it's the Astros. Like, steroids never really offended me. I think you can make a case that the guys who took steroids, actually, you can say it's cutting corners, but they have to work just as hard. You still have to go out there, lift weights. You still have to see ball, hit ball. So that never really offended me. I don't know. Some of these guys are being really, really strange. And I don't know if the Astros, maybe because, in fairness, so just to kind of bring it back to your side of things and bring it back to the side of everyone else. In fairness, there have been rumblings behind the scenes in baseball with the people you talk to, whether it's people who work for other organizations or, you know, people who cover baseball closely, that the Astros have been acting arrogant and there's been rumblings about something fishy going on for a long time. So maybe that's why the guys like the Buster Olneys and the other guys like to point out all the flaws in the Astros and come out swinging as much as they did. So in fairness, there might be more to it than that. But just on the outside, it just seems like it's basically like people are foaming at the mouth for this opportunity to fire off on the Astros.
Keep this in mind, too. As we found out on Friday when the stuff about Jeff Luhnow came out, Major League Baseball came down on what they absolutely, positively, unequivocally could prove. They knew there was probably more going on. In fact, they flat out said Jeff Luhnow, they in essence said, if he didn't know, he should have, and we have credible evidence to believe that he probably knew. But they didn't have hard prove it evidence. So I think the punishment was like, it was kind of biased toward, like, you know what, they're getting off easy in terms of what we could prove. There was a lot more that we could have done. And maybe even some buzzers with the quote unquote, you know, not credible evidence, or maybe even the stuff that they talked about with Luhnow, that, you know, just how much he actually was involved. They couldn't hard and fast prove that, so maybe they're actually like kind of letting them off easy in a sense. Could have been a lot worse.
The OG John Lopez, Landry Locker, Figgy Fig with you. Texans are operating in a two-year window, and it's time to go on a spending spree. No more selective aggression. It's time to get aggressive. That's next. All right, I think there's a two-year window that the Texans are operating on. We've seen them not be aggressive when free agency begins. I think it's time to get aggressive. I think there is a two-year window, and I think you got to throw all the chips on the table. You've given Bill O'Brien the power. Bill O'Brien has been functioning like there is a small window. So I think as the offseason approaches, you have no choice but to be aggressive. This was Ross Tucker last week on Payne and Pendergast talking about the limited resources the Texans have and the fact that the Texans need to try to win now rather than try to build something given the assets they have. We'll hear that in just a second here on Sports Radio 610. But do you have any reservations about functioning that way with the organization, John?
I mean, I don't personally, because I'm tired of waiting to win. But if you're, you know, in the school of thought like, I don't want to kind of hijack the future, well, then you would have an issue with it. But I don't, because if Bill O'Brien is going to be the coach, and you have to accept that, he's going to be the coach and general manager. If he's going to be here at least 2 years, as several people have said, most notably John McClain, then yeah, go all in. Help him out as much as you can, as much as he wants to. And then, you know, he's truly making his own bed here. I mean, there's not going to be anyone to blame but him. There's not going to be any decision made but his. And if it doesn't work, he's out of here. You know, he's gone. This time he really will be gone, but he's got at least 2 years to get that done.
Here was Ross Tucker talking about the current situation and the limited assets and why it might be time to be aggressive sooner rather than later.
No, I think it's laughable. I really do. I don't think, number one, that he has earned that. Number two, those are, I would argue, three full-time jobs. Full-time, balls-to-the-wall, 14-hour, 16-hour-a-day jobs. It's too much. And look, I'm not mad at O'Brien for it. He likes calling the plays. He's the head coach. He's been able to get this power as GM. I'm not mad at him. I think it's poor on the Texans for giving it to him. I don't think he's earned it. And I think the biggest issue, it's going to be very hard for him to not make decisions based on a coach, which is more short-term as opposed to long-term. You know, he was able to do short-term things that enabled him to get the power that I think he coveted. But I think he's probably a year or two from this whole thing being blown up.
Just, I mean, let her rip.
Just and right?
Because of that, just let her rip. I mean, honestly, like, you can the table has been set. You either adjust to what's on the table or else you're basically taking yourself in completely different directions. Like, the Texans can't approach this offseason all of a sudden and say, you know what, we really want to build something in a 5-year window. We know that Deshaun Watson's young, but we got to build it in a 5-year window. It's too late. You've traded your two draft picks, two firsts and a second. You have DeAndre Hopkins, who has 3 years remaining, and J.J. Watt, who has 2 years remaining on his contract. They aren't getting any younger. You're going to have to use a lot of cap space on Laremy Tunsil and Deshaun Watson. At this point, the table has been set, so it's time to just stick the coconuts on that table and go all in. It is a 2-year window. It could get very, very ugly for the Texans in the next few years. And quite honestly, Bill O'Brien, there's a strong chance that if this doesn't work for Bill O'Brien the next 2 years, he's going to pass this off to someone. And it's gonna the organization, the franchise is gonna be in much worse shape than it was before he got here. That's just the deal. The table's been set. Go ahead and adjust to that table. Stick the coconuts on there. Be aggressive. Go all in. Do whatever you got
to
do.
I mean, look, if I'm Bill O'Brien and I have the chance to take over as general manager, head coach, play caller, czar, whatever you want to call it, King Bill, he's not going to say no. You know, I know he had a lot to do with it. He's pushed for this. He doesn't play well with others. I mean, he's that kid that pushes the kids out of the sandbox. All right, we've established that. But if you're going to give that kid all the power, well, of course he's going to take it. All I'm saying is, like, you know, it has to work now. There is this limited window that it has to work, because you're going to be paying guys a lot of money. And if it fails, I mean, it's going to be a disaster. I'm not trying to be over the top here, but given all the money he's going to spend, Deshaun's going to be on that big contract, Tunsil's going to be on that big contract, you don't have any premium first-round draft picks, all that stuff. If it fails and he doesn't get where he needs to get in the next 2 years, this franchise is going to be hamstrung for several years after that.
And you're going to have Deshaun Watson under the age of 30 in that situation. I mean, the train has left the station. Like, you can't come out when you're meeting with all these guys in the organization and all of a sudden say, you know what, we're going to start being smart and we're going to start building. You don't sign Whitney Merciless to the deal that he got if you're doing that. You don't give the money to Nick Martin. You don't trade all the draft picks that you made. So the train has left the station.
Yeah.
Just keep up with the train. Don't try to backpedal. It's out there. So just maintain that mindset. You know what? Last year, I was fine with it being selectively aggressive, as Brian Gain called it, and looking at that 5-year window. I think at this point last year, you can make a case that the future was brighter for the Houston Texans when it comes to 5 to 10 years for the majority of the prime of Deshaun Watson. But right now, you can, I guess this is a good thing. Right now, the 2-year window, you're in better position for the next couple of years probably as a football team to be aggressive and to try to go all in. But that's where you're at right now. It's a now or never situation for Bill O'Brien, and it's the way the table has been set. So just go ahead and eat dinner accordingly. Go all in.
You don't kind of jump into the pool. You either jump in or you don't, right? You don't just stick your toe in the water and say you jumped in the pool. No, if you're going to jump in, yeah, you're jumping in, and Bill O'Brien is going to be doing that. And he's got an open checkbook. He's got, the endorsement of the owner. He's got all the power. there's good news and bad news. The good news is if it works, if he finally has gotten everything that he's wanted and gotten rid of Rick Smith and gotten rid of Brian Gain and gotten all the power and the official title and calling plays and all that stuff that we've been talking about, then there's no shuffling off the blame to anyone else. He's always had that little escape hatch. You know, early in his career with the quarterbacks, they didn't have a franchise quarterback. We know the story, right? There's no more escape hatch for Bill O'Brien. So if you're in, you're in.
And they're in.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the situation they're in. They're in. So
it's a big risk.
You got to do it. I mean, it's a risk that's already been taken. So
Yeah. There's
nothing you can do. There is absolutely nothing you can do at this point. You're not going to – you can't get – unless they can invest in a time machine at NRG and go back in time and not trade those first-round picks, mm-hmm. the second-round pick. Not give Whitney Merciless and Nick Martin those deals. If they had a time machine, then maybe you could go back in time and change things. But as you sit right now, you can't. And that's the cards they've been dealt. And they're going to have to overcome not having first round picks for the next 2 years. And they're going to have to pay those bills that are due pretty soon. And it's going to be interesting to see how Deshaun Watson and Laremy Tunsil, you know, handle those situations whenever that does come through. I just want to know what the first tough decision is going to be and if a tough decision will even be made.
For B.O.B.?
Yeah, I mean, at some point you have to let players go. It's not going to be Whitney Merciless. Is it going to be Bradley Roby? Is it going to be D.J. Reader?
Reader is the most likely, right?
So those are going to be the tough decisions that are made right there.
The toughest decision, and I know you don't agree with this, is going to be Will Fuller. You talk about a roll of the dice. If he's all in, does that mean I'm all in with this guy because I know what he can do with the offense when healthy? Or does it mean got to get rid of him and get another receiver in here that's more reliable? That decision is going to be tough for him. $10 million you save if you release him.
I just didn't even think it was a possibility to release Will Fuller. I didn't.
They might not even be considering
it. I know they've gotten rid of guys, you know, before that fifth-year option kicks in. I know they did that with Kevin Johnson, but I just thought that Will Fuller was – I mean, it's been presented and sold that he's just so important. I didn't even think it was a possibility.
He had surgery again this offseason. I mean, it's nonstop.
It's kind of a regular thing with him.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it would be.
If I had to bet, I mean, they're going to keep him.
It would be the first tough decision they made that directly impacts the offense. And then
that's a good point.
And then you start asking the question, well, if they don't have Will Fuller, do they have the staff in place offensively that can maximize what you have from your talent? Mm-hmm. And I think there's healthy skepticism. Clint Sterner's talked about it. A lot of people have talked about it that, you know, the offensive coordinator and the offensive staff doesn't really maximize what their offensive guys have. So mm-hmm. are you going to be able to do that with Will Fuller? All the tough decisions so far have been made on defense.
I mean, look, he's a first rounder and he's been electric when he's healthy. If I had to bet, they're not going to release Will Fuller. There is that money, though, that's a factor in the unreliability. So I don't know. The other ones that could be made, I mean, obviously, you know, the secondary, there's some players there that, I mean, what are you going to do with Roby? What are you going to do, you know, with...
They're saying Roby's gone.
Yeah.
J.J.'s going to retire probably, right? Mm-hmm. So then you have to look at cornerbacks. And how do you usually get cornerbacks? First-round picks? Or you pay them a lot of money? I don't know how much money they're going to have to throw around at the cornerbacks. So you're going to have to make that choice. But the defense right now, when it comes to tough decisions, when it comes to making the tough calls, the defense, it's always come at the sake of the defense. Letting Clowney walk or trading Clowney, whatever you have to do, and maybe D.J. Reader, that comes at the sake of defense. Offensively,
what are you going to do with
Hyde any tough decisions.
And Lamar Miller?
Peace out. Lamar Miller's already a free agent. You got to think he's gone, right?
I would guess.
Lamar's probably going to be gone. Hyde's going to be gone. Duke Johnson's going to be coming back. And then there's talk about maybe even throwing money at Melvin Gordon. And if you are functioning in that two-year window, why the hell not? Just go ahead mm-hmm. and do it. But it's going to be tough, you know, as Bill O'Brien, to see exactly what he does. And furthermore, I think it's going to be interesting to see how he competes with these other general managers in the division, because you're going to have Chris Ballard, who a year ago was the toast of the entire NFL. I know we got accused of, you know, hyping up the Colts front office last year before Andrew Luck retired. That guy's going to have all kinds of assets to play mm-hmm. with. And their five-year window is in pretty decent shape, assuming they find a quarterback. We know it's all about the quarterback, but all the assets they got, the fact that they've been able to draft guys the way that they have, their window is pretty open for the Indianapolis Colts.
Can I interest you in a list of all the unrestricted free agents on this roster for 2020?
Go ahead.
And comment, say yay or nay, whatever you want to do. Bradley Roby.
I would say yes, but I think the Whitney Merciless deal makes it a little bit more difficult. But yes, I think Bradley Roby would be a guy that I would want to bring back. Do I think he's going to be back? No.
Lamar Miller.
Peace.
Jonathan Joseph.
It's been a great career.
I don't disagree with you on any of these so far. Barcavius Mingo, we know
sure.
He's gone.
No, he'll be a special teamer.
Really? He's going to get a nice fat contract.
29 years old?
Fat what? It's going to be like a minimum comeback and play special teams.
Fairbairn?
Yes, bring back.
McCarron?
Yeah, whatever.
No, you got to bring him back. He's a good backup.
Oh.
Yeah, he's a good backup.
Whatever.
And he's about $3 million. That's
whatever.
Chump change.
Sure.
Carlos Hyde.
Peace.
Market value of $3 million, though, man.
Peace.
That's not that much either if you want to sign him.
Holla.
Really?
Holla.
Brandon Dunn.
Sure.
Yeah, you got to bring him back. Darren Fells.
Peace. It's going to be a lot of free agent veteran tight ends.
This roster is going to be.
I think you can upgrade there.
It's going to look a lot different next year.
You can upgrade there.
Jahlil Adai.
Bring him back. He's
yeah,
good
I like him
he's
a lot.
A
I think he's. I think he had an under kind of a low key pretty good season.
He was solid this year.
Yeah. Mike Adams.
Too old. Bye.
40 years old, man. Joe Webb's gone. Tywin Jones, running back.
Yeah, whatever. I'm going to come back on
just
a
get him on the cheap, right?
Teams.
And then the other guys are all a bunch of that.
Oh, wow.
Like
you're
that.
Just ignoring
except,
our guy like that?
Hold on. Oh, John Weeks?
Yeah.
Oh, you pay him what he wants, man.
Max.
You pay him what he wants.
Max his ass out.
DJ Reader, 26 years old, and his market value, according to SpotRack, anyway.
$15.5 million if you franchise tag him.
Market value, 5 years, $59 million.
Someone else is going to give him that money. He's gone.
That's what his market is.
He's gone.
And he's going to get it, too. This is why DJ Reader started to play football, to get the second contract in the NFL.
Especially as a fifth-round pick.
He made $600,000 this year. He's going to be making 5 years, 59, according to SpotRack.
I'm happy for him.
Oh, I'm happy for him, too.
What frustrates me the most about this is when you're talking about a GM and you're talking about B.O.B., who's been functioning as a GM for the last 8 months, according to the Cal McNair statement. What frustrates me the most about this is if you would have presented this list to me like 2 months ago, I would have put DJ Reader and Bradley Roby, I would have prioritized them over Whitney Merciless. As far as guys that you have to bring back.
Yeah,
if you're talking about even 5 years from now, even 2 years from now, like when we talk about the 2 year window and the 5 year window, if you talk about immediate needs for 2020 and then the 5 year window, the young guys like the DJ Readers and Bradley Roby, I would prioritize them over the Whitney Mercilesses, but instead they prioritize Whitney Merciless over those. And I just don't I don't understand what the line of thinking was there. First of all, you're going to get Duke Ejiofor back next year. Who knows what he's going to be? I don't know.
I get it.
But Whitney Merciless fell off a cliff when J.J. Watt was out of the lineup. Mm-hmm. And you have to evaluate a guy that you're going to make the top 10 in his position just as much with J.J. Watt out of the lineup as you do in, because J.J., I know he came back this season, but he's had 3 out of 4 season-ending injuries. So I think that's how you have to evaluate it. So that's what confuses me about this defense is I'm having to say no now to guys like Roby and DJ Reader because you made this decision about Whitney Merciless. It didn't make sense then, and it doesn't make sense now,
John. But doesn't that tie
John?
Into how this whole conversation started? Bill O'Brien is in. I mean, he's in,
are you in if you're making if you're prioritizing a guy? Where would Whitney have been on your list?
Tough, smart, dependable.
Okay, but where would he have been on your list if we're talking about the best interest of the team?
I agree with you 100%. I mean, 100%. I would have prioritized Reader. I would have prioritized a lot of these guys over Merciless. All I'm saying is, you know, Bill O'Brien has that circle, man.
That's what scares the
circle
bleep.
Of trust.
That's what scares the bleep out of me, John, is that we're talking about a guy that needs to function in this small window, and he is prioritizing guys that you and myself, and those are two opinions that I respect very much. I have to deal with them on the daily basis, but you and myself are both saying that Whitney would be the third of those, and Whitney's the one that got the deal before those two guys, and it looks like it's a possibility that those two guys are going to be walking.
Well, look at his annual average salary, DJ Reader.
By the way, I'm happy for Whitney.
Of course. Anytime a guy makes money, you're happy for him, but you got to look at the big picture for the team, too. His annual salary is going to average to $11.9 million, DJ Reader. They're not – add that to what you're going to have with Tunsil. I mean, and obviously
Tunsil is going to even negotiate with him.
No,
like there's no you can negotiate with Deshaun.
Mm-hmm.
It might be on a different level.
It's a different, yeah.
But you can negotiate with Deshaun. Like, you can say, you're not Pat Mahomes, you know, we want to, like, you can negotiate.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell are you going to do with Tunsil? You gave up 2 firsts and a second to get him.
Right.
And you brought him in here, like, what are you going to say? Like, what's the starting point?
You're not going to say anything. You're going to say yes. I mean, you're going to try to keep it as low as you can.
Laramie's going to get paid,
He's getting paid.
He is going to get some serious bread, mm-hmm. some absolute serious bread. And I just don't know when it's going to happen. Like, when does that happen? Furthermore, let's say this. Let's say you ride it out with Laramie Tunsil and Deshaun Watson. So let's say that somehow you don't pay Deshaun Watson this year. You don't pay Laramie. And let's say that you just ride it out with those guys. What happens if Bill O'Brien, let's say that the Texans have a rough 2020 and Cal McNair comes out and says, you know what? I gave him all the power. It hasn't worked out. We got to move on to the next guy. So what's the next GM going to do when he has to – obviously, he's going to pay Deshaun. Is Laramie Tunsil going to mean as much to the next GM as he does Bill O'Brien, who traded the 2 firsts and second?
Yeah, but the contract's already going to be there. I mean, the money's going to be paid. I mean, look at what these guys are making at left tackle. Top three paid are Tyron Smith, Taylor Lewan, and Jake Matthews.
What did Taylor Lewan just get? Because I think that's the most recent extension.
$80 million, 5 years.
What was the guarantee?
The guaranteed was $34 million.
Lord. I mean,
so
you got to give me 40 if I'm Laramie.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm going in there and I'm Laramie, I'm saying I want 40 mil guaranteed.
Yeah.
Well, you're not Taylor Lewan. Well, Taylor Lewan didn't get two first round picks and a second traded for him. So you're going to have to go ahead and give me that bread. What a lucky, lucky situation.
Base salary for Taylor Lewan in 2020 was $16 million. 2021, 11.6. 2022, 12.9. 2023, 14.8 are the base salaries. You can't have them all. You can't get those three. Of those three guys, you can't keep them all. And I guess DJ Reader's going to be the odd man out.
I guess if you want to look at the positive, though, at least they don't really have to worry about the offensive line at this point. The offensive line is,
right.
you would like to think, you might need a right guard. But you got your young guys. You got your Laramie Tunsil. You just made Nick Martin one of the highest paid centers in the league. So you don't
That's
have to worry
deal,
about drop
the
spot.
Way.
I didn't understand that one at all. That one made zero
deal,
sense.
Though.
And he had a decent year, so there was some like attempts to justify it. I didn't understand that one at all. The Nick Martin deal. Like, are you going to get in a situation like even the Cowboys, who have one of the best lines in the game, the Cowboys are in a situation where they might be, if there's such a thing, investing too much in their offensive line. The Texans are going to get in that situation
now? Yeah, well, they have to.
I mean, you're going to have the highest paid left tackle. You might have the highest paid center. So it's just a crazy, crazy situation to be in. But to each his own, it's just kind of the card you're dealt. But it's going to be awesome. But the bottom line is this. Be aggressive.
Yeah.
Be aggressive. That is the theme of the offseason for your Houston Texans. The OG John Lopez, Landry Locker, Figgy Fig with you. Could the Indianapolis Colts be looking at another quarterback? And one of the most overhyped yet intriguing free agents that we've seen in a long, long time. Let's go around the NFL next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.